Yeah.
Super, that's Spanish or Portuguese for sure. It's Iberian.
It just sounds like a giant chicken.
Hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. This is a special on location live, oh my god, we're on site podcast from the Hotel Intercontinental Lisbon, as you can see from all the shininess in the background. And we're here because it is the light reading, which is why I'm heavily outnumbered by light reading here, the light reading 2020 Vision Summit. Is that right?
Indeed.
And so we've got any regular watchers or listeners of the pod will recognise Ian and Ray from light reading, but you probably haven't met Phil before. Phil is the US news editor, right, Phil?
Yes.
And you've been up there on stage. You two have been doing a sort of double act, Lauren Hardy sort of routine, up on stage, seeing us through the day. Now,
I think that makes me Hardy.
I wasn't going there. I was just going to look.
He was about to go like that, just to stress the point.
Can we carry a ladder up the stairs for you by any chance?
There's a piano down there.
Yeah, right. Careful.
So I meant that obviously in an entirely complimentary way.
He was saying we're funny.
Okay, sure.
But there's just before I sort of hand it over to you guys to tell us how the day's gone, there's one sort of slight problem, which is the whole day is done on what we call Chatham House rules, which is we're not allowed to repeat anything that's said in the room.
That's correct.
So with that in mind, I think we'll just call it a day there. Thanks a lot, John. See you later.
We're done.
No, only joking. I'm sure you can skillfully sort of tiptoe among the sort of sensitive stuff. So I'll hand it over to you, Phil. How's the day gone? What's been chatted about?
Well, the big themes are the same. In the session, we go into a bit more detail. People get into their specific gripes about specific things that vendors are doing or telcos are doing or tendencies they have in working together. But the big picture is still the same. Telecoms are worried about implementing 5G. They're not sure they've made the business case for edge computing. They're worried about AI, and I guess in business models, in terms of how the stuff evolves, there's a big difference between what they can do and what they will do, and that's kind of where they're stuck with a lot. They have a lot of capabilities to take on a lot of these futuristic things like smart cities and edge computing, but will they? It's not really 100% clear.
Yeah, we made the mistake of asking some. Can this happen? Right. Questions. Everybody's going, of course it can happen. We go, but will it happen? Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So you've got, hopefully this isn't too confidential to give away, but you've got these little paddles that have got sort of yes and no, and they're quite an efficient way of getting straw polls from the audience. And as you were just describing, Ray, when you shift the questioning from can to will, there was a bit of a flipping of the old paddle, wasn't there?
Yeah. But I think it's interesting, I've managed to be at all five, which has been great. I've been to Reykjavik and all sorts of places. But the big difference I noticed today was how much, and this was us as well, but people in the audience were talking about AWS.
Right.
You know, Amazon Web Services is now almost a talking point around so many, or at the center of so many different topics.
Why is that?
Because now it's the company that is being used. It's a platform for operators to launch services on now. That's different from a year ago. It's a platform upon which vendors are saying that their applications are ready to run on AWS, to run out of the public cloud. And we're kind of using AWS as an example of public cloud operators. But I think they're definitely more advanced than any of the others in terms of how they interact and partner with the telcos to offer the capabilities they've got, while at the same time being the biggest threat.
Yeah, that's the paradox, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, I get that impression. I'm not an expert on cloud, but then I'm not an expert on much, if I'm honest. but one impression I get, apart from AWS, was sort of early to the game. Yeah. They seem to have got that partnership sort of stuff you described. They seem to have got nailed. And that seems to be one of the reasons they're doing well.
They've hired a lot of telco people.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they understand the business model. They also do development really well in terms of developing the platform to do whatever it is that they need it to do. They seem to have they seem to have a way of doing that that's more efficient and gets things done in a more efficient way than the carriers.
Sorry, I was listening.
Thank you.
something even more important than your monologue.
Yeah,
hey, cheers, everybody.
We agreed, whatever it was.
AWS, something, something, blah, blah.
And they all lived happily ever after.
Well, we're going to have to redact all this anyway. So.
That's
yes, that's true. Yeah, you're just going to have a long test card, like in the old days. Picture of a girl with a blackboard. I'll show my age there.
Okay, may I ask a question? Why does the beer here sound like a giant chicken?
Yeah.
Super
book. or a giant South African. Yes. Either way, it's just some beer.
Yeah. But it's super nice.
Mm-hmm. We were, while we're on this tangent, we're hitting the Negronis a bit last night.
Right.
So, Ray, you introduced Ian to Negronis, and he hasn't looked back, has he?
That AWS discussion is like completely gone. Forget about that.
We shipped it off to the cloud, and we're not going to download it.
That's right. I'm afraid. And Ian's wife is here now, and I'm pretty sure when she finds out that was me, that I'm going to get a bit of a talking to. But yes.
She had a Negroni last night.
She's been introduced.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah. Everybody's on board.
Yeah, I got something called the Undercover, which is this sort of cocktail of lethal spirits with lots of citrus. And I asked that it was actually the creation of the bar lady that we were served by. And she said, this is my own thing. And why'd you call it Undercover? It's because it disguises all the booze with all this nice lime and citrus. It was pretty tasty, if I'm honest. We might have to, go back there again.
How strong was
how
it?
Many, how
how
many
strong
did
was
you
she
have?
And how strong was the drink?
She was good, actually. She took a bit of warming up. She was a bit moody to start with. But then once we got chatting,
she warmed to you when you ordered her cocktail.
There we are. And I said it was nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Looked down on me and Magda for ordering Negronis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're not in Italy.
Or Brooklyn. Yeah.
While we're on it, I'm looking forward to we're going to some castle for dinner, aren't we?
Yeah.
So
I hope I can swim the moat, because that's apparently how you get there.
Is
castles. That's the only thing I know about castles.
No one told me that. Yeah. Anyway, we digress. So apart from all the cloudy business, any other major things? What about the Edge stuff? Is that just still part of that narrative, or is it a completely sort of separate? Because I noticed that came up a fair bit.
Yeah,
it's definitely separate, but it's related, because they're thinking of Edge and this Edge computing capabilities in the same way that people did the cloud a few years ago. If we just build the platform and develop on it, then the use case will appear magically, because people will want to use that capability. And telcos are making an argument that they don't have a specific enough use case to build a business around to justify the investment.
Yeah.
As if
it's a bit chicken and egg.
5G and autonomous cars and smart cities aren't a big enough use case.
Right.
And that's where the logic kind of falls apart to me. I think everyone should be, in a race to get to the best edge computing capability as soon as possible, and just tell your investors, hey, we're a business funded by debt. Here's some more debt. I'm not an investor, by the way.
Yeah, really? that's a great pitch for that. Hey, look, debt. What's wrong with that?
People wish you were an investor.
Yeah, right.
Have some more. I'm drinking beer.
if you're like that after a couple of sips of Super Bowl.
No, I'm like that all the time.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. There is that. If we accept it as inevitable, if we set certain sort of infrastructure developments as inevitable,
right,
then why not just get on with it?
That seems to be, because we know we're going to need, to reduce latency in the network, whether 5G is here or not, we're going to need to reduce latency in the network for all the advanced applications that have to happen inside of, inside of IoT-related and sensor-related computing. You just have to cut down the latency. And, and those are small amounts of bandwidth. That doesn't require 5G, but it does require a quick, speedy network that returns data fast. So it needs to happen.
And the physics of the edge part of it is just distance from the end device.
Just bringing computing closer to the user, bringing all the bandwidth and capability as close to the user as possible. And I think, depending on who you talk to, the implementation of course, will change. So it's not, that's the other sort of thing, as everyone gets away from talking about edge computing, because it's not just one big nebulous topic.
Yeah.
It means different things to different industries. IT has one definition, telcos have another, and that's where
I'm going to disagree.
Yeah?
Just to be argumentative, so.
and just to say something.
exactly. Chicken at some point. I think like there's still a lack of really compelling use cases for low latency, and I think that's one of the reasons they don't want to make investments in the edge. Because I think a lot of the IoT stuff, when you're talking about things like smart meters, they don't need low latency connections. They just need to transmit very small bursts of data every now and again. But it's not critical that you have a low latency connection for that. And I think that the stuff that gets talked about on the low latency side, it always tends to be there's always two use cases that get mentioned in the UK. I don't know about the US, but it's always autonomous cars,
right,
and remote control surgery.
I've taken the piss out of that many times.
And yeah. there's not a lot at the same time.
Yes.
Oh no.
An autonomous car that can also take your tonsils out.
And both of those, it's kind of the kind of business case around them for a telco is, or for the technologies that are used, is not clear. And I think that's one of the issues, that they just don't see the ROI to do the investments that are needed in edge computing. And I mean, on the one hand, if they don't do it, you can say that they're being timid and they're going to lose out to the web guys in the long run, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think they see the ROI until Google does it. And then they're suddenly going to get scared and they're going to figure out how to do it.
Right.
And
that's a bit reactive.
Yeah, yeah, that's where I think this goes, is to build out even low latency or even high latency, low bandwidth devices like parking meters and stuff like that. You still have to put small cells into cities, and those have to touch fiber at some point in the city. And while you're there, you know, open up the street, you have to go ahead and, you know, especially with dealing with cities, you have to think ahead. What are we going to put in here next? And I think that's where some of this stuff comes, is they're thinking ahead to, well, if we're going to do this much in terms of just getting parking meters, shouldn't we be, you know, advancing the infrastructure all the way?
But also, if you build out that compute and storage, like somewhere at the edge of, say, your mobile network, and it's at the edge of your network, and you know you're going to use 40% of it some of the time, but not the other 60%, then you just open that up like IT real estate and say, who wants it? And you can have it for a day or an hour.
So that's what Amazon.
Or a minute.
But
or,
I don't think the telcos have that.
No. And this is it. This is the platform.
Isn't
it
happening
service.
A bit with the telcos? Like, I don't know for certain, but I heard that Telefonica is doing something with Amazon Greengrass in that kind of area.
So it is in some central offices in Madrid. But the thing is, after a year, they'd got a little bit further along.
Right.
So the pace of change is much slower. But I think we're actually going to hear tomorrow from an operator that made an acquisition, and which is providing distributed cloud or edge computing services already to enterprises. But they had to buy a specialist company that had figured it out. They didn't figure it out themselves, but they see the business opportunity. So I mean, there's just lots of different ways to approach this, and lots of different ways in which you might be able to make a business case for it. But I think it's fair to say that at the moment, nobody's actually gone, hey, this is definitely going to work, and we know we're going to get our money back.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I was talking to Orange.
And unfortunately, Phil is not the investor for anything. So.
No.
But I remember Orange saying a few months ago that they were trying to move along the kind of exciting side of 5G, you know, where you're using it to support things like edge computing and find new use cases. By, I think they've set up some kind of facility in Paris with Nokia, where they're kind of inviting enterprises to come and sort of pitch ideas. But it's things like that that are probably needed before this is going to go any further.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't. You don't hear operators standing up at trade shows very often and saying, here's a really great way that edge computing can be used, and these are the kind of services, and these are the sort of things that enterprises should be doing.
You're not going to.
Whereas, if it was me, I'd come up with loads of ideas.
You'd be all over it.
Yeah.
You haven't been reading that much because you've been shooting videos most of the day.
Yeah, I don't know what's
going on.
There's
another one for
here,
you.
Really.
You've basically been sat there the whole day, haven't you?
Just disagreeing with everybody. I don't think so. No.
Ian, this is a commercial partner. Can you be a little bit more agreeable, please? I mean, one of the things I take away from it, again, from a slightly ignorant point of view, is just it's so huge, the scope and the scale and the many moving parts and stakeholders and competing interests are so mesmerisingly big that I just sometimes come away with it thinking, yeah, how can you ever resolve this stuff? But then obviously we always do eventually. And when you look back,
somebody does.
Yeah, somebody does. But when you're right in the middle of it, it's sometimes hard to see the wood for the trees and all that sort of thing. So yeah, but I'll say one thing about these, and I'm not just saying it because you guys are here and you beat me up if I'm horrible. But I think events like this are really cool.
The food's good.
The food's good. Cocktails are good. And who doesn't like a custard tart at the end of the day? No, sincerely.
Is that a euphemism?
You didn't. Nobody said not me. So
No, events like this where people are actually having proper chats, and because we have this chat mouse rules, not knowing that we're going to go off and deceptively talk about it on video. I think are really useful. And I'm chatting to other people when we're having coffee, and they find these things useful. They also talk about how they find whatever we're going to do after when they end up in some bar. Sort of drunkenly putting the world to rights. Yeah. That's a useful thing. But basically getting a bunch of people with a lot of professional overlap in one place at one time is obviously a really useful thing. So fair play to you guys. I think this sort of event's a good idea. So yeah.
It has to do with me, but...
Yeah, well done, Ian.
Yeah,
well,
nice job.
Well, even by virtue of being a light reading employee, you've still done more than I have.
Just turn up.
I'm just here because we happen to be owned by the same great big conglomerate.
No, you're a massive attraction.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. People go, Scott and me there.
Yes.
Yeah. We almost put it on the invitation.
Yeah, exactly. Featuring Scott.
They were talking about Scott McNeely, but we didn't say anything.
Featuring Scott off telecoms.com. So yeah, given that's the sort of vague all we can talk about without betraying the trust of these people. Let's talk about other stuff that's been going on. So while you in between doing all these videos today, Ian, you wrote a couple of stories. So this comes up nearly every podcast, doesn't it? This whole issue of Chinese vendors getting a hard time off Western...
One of the big themes of the year.
Yeah, off Western countries. And I wrote quite a short speculative piece, partly collating stuff that's been in the press, including something you wrote at the start of the week about how the UK needs to sort of make a call on specifically Huawei. Because obviously Huawei has a hard time in the US, it's now getting a hard time in Australia. Recently there's news about it getting a hard time in New Zealand. And there's apparently this intelligence alliance called Five Eyes, which is sort of Anglophone, which is basically US, Australia, New Zealand, us and Canada. And there's a lot of rumours that the US, the Trump administration, is putting pressure on such allies to get into line.
Yeah.
And of course, the broader geopolitical thing is all this sort of saber rattling he's been doing about China to do with trade and all that sort of thing for quite a while. And then, so the most interesting development after my sort of verbose preamble, I'll hand it over to you, was a major sort of UK operator's finally sort of come out and said something quite strident about Huawei, so why don't you take it from there?
Yeah, it was the Financial Times sort of broke the story this morning, actually, give credit to them.
Credit where it's due.
Revealed that BT is removing Huawei from its mobile core networks.
Right.
And
as a provider of any kit.
As a provider of any kit. So BT has always kept Huawei out of the core, actually. But
why is that?
But,
is it all became for the same an issue security after the, sort of stuff?
Yeah, it goes back to some principles that I think were sort of drawn up in 2006. I mean, Ray would know the background more than I do.
Yeah, when they came up with their 21CN next generation network strategy.
Right.
They said, we're absolutely fine to have anybody providing the passive infrastructure, so optical networking, access networks, but when it comes to the intelligent applications at the core of the network, so IN, voice management, subscriber data management, etc., we're going to stick with the people we know, which at the time was Marconi, which had just been bought by Ericsson.
So
Ericsson got that gig.
Marconi, that's a name from the past.
Indeed. And so I can remember reporting that, but I can't remember what I wrote last week.
Right.
That's the weird thing.
happens to the best of us, right?
Yeah.
Have another beer.
But of course, this what BT is now.
Yeah, so they bought EE in 2016, and EE had Huawei in the core, basically.
EE was a bit more mellow about Huawei.
EE had, I think it had Huawei kit in the 3G and the 4G core. And so that's being removed, basically, now. But the process is apparently going to take, I mean, the FT said up to 2 years, and then right. I got in touch with BT subsequently, and they said that was kind of an ambitious target, could take a lot longer.
Right.
It's not just on the mobile core that they're removing Huawei. They're also they're cutting it out of any 5G core
yeah.
business.
And that's been the sort of core thread that we've seen in places
yeah,
like Australia.
Yeah, that's been the big issue.
It's been that look, whatever happened before, yeah. they're coming.
And I think that ties in with the stuff that we've just been talking about, that 5G will be used in all sorts of devices
yeah.
in all sorts of context that it isn't at the moment, and therefore the security concern is much higher.
And it's considered a bit more vulnerable because of this sort of decentralisation, this edge stuff
yeah.
and all that.
So the other things that they're keeping it out of are mobile edge computing. It won't be allowed to tender for any business there.
Right.
And apparently they're also taking it out of the DWDM optical network as well.
I don't know what that stands for.
It's
anyone know what that stands for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go on then.
Dense wave
division multiplexing.
That's the one. It was on the tip of my tongue.
And that is the strange part to me. So edge, I can see why, because basically with a distributed cloud architecture, then the edge is going to be housing
yep.
a distributed 5G core. So
sure.
that kind of follows and makes sense. But not having Huawei in the optical transport
that's
network,
just moving bits from here to
yeah,
there.
I don't understand. So. That might be a decision they've made, but I can't imagine that they would be making it on the same logic base.
No.
Which makes you think that more and more of these decisions are being politically rather than technologically influenced.
But it is quite a big decision as well, isn't it? I think
yeah.
Sterling Perrin, our analyst, already pointed out in a comment that that's quite a big chunk of work, and
it is,
Huawei's
absolutely.
Been involved in that for a long time.
Yeah, since 2006, and I think it was Huawei and Ciena, if I remember correctly, were in the core, in the optical core.
but they still will feature in the RAN. That's the important
yeah.
thing. They have they're a big 4G RAN supplier to EE, and they're also providing test 5G kit, which. EE's sort of using in trials at the moment. So,
the underlying concern for sort of Western allies is that the Huawei kit in the core could yield vulnerabilities which the Chinese state could exploit. But they're not worried about Huawei kit in the RAN yielding similar vulnerabilities.
Well, it's because it's where the intelligence,
exactly.
is in the network and
or phones or whatever else they make.
Details
yeah.
Yeah,
IT links to IT.
But that might change. That's what concerns me for them. We're obviously neutral on this. We just commentate. But there's sort of momentum, and you get the impression increasingly that there's banning
yeah.
going on just in case.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like if someone just just assume there's something wrong with the individual, and suddenly you got this exclusion zone around them, and no one's proven anything. No one really knows what's wrong with them, but they're like
that's
a bit
right.
dodgy.
We've not seen any empirical. Analysis
no.
or truth to say that anything that Huawei or ZTE has developed has snooping capabilities
yeah.
and could be exploited in the future. No evidence whatsoever.
Which is what yeah. makes it feel more
I
political
think
to
even
me.
Even when MI6, MI6's head, Alex Younger, I think, turned up at a UK event this week, which he doesn't often do, and
mm-hmm.
was probably asked about this, but even he didn't have any specifics. He just sort of went, oh, well, this is something we need to
look at very,
look
at very closely,
yeah.
yeah.
Which and the timing to me is very suspicious.
Quite, yeah. When we don't believe in coincidences, us paranoid journalists, do we? yeah.
I believe in coincidences.
Do you? Yeah. No, I reserve the right to unilaterally speak on behalf. What was I going to say? Yeah, I mean, it just feels like part of the geopolitical thing for me, where there's obviously, the broader narrative, I won't get into it too much, it was obviously a big Trump, it was part of his election
yeah.
thing, that the Chinese, in his view, don't play fair in terms of international trade.
Yeah.
And there are various little subsets of that part of it. It might be something like currency manipulation or general mercantilism and ensuring that the balance of trade is heavily in their favour, or it could be intellectual property. And obviously we've been talking about sometimes intellectual property goes for a bit of a wonder
yeah.
in China and that sort of thing. And this just feels like another string to that bow to me.
It does, but to be fair, the Chinese government does not help Huawei's case, and
yeah.
very often Huawei does not help its own case. I mean, this over the years, this is a company that has been caught bang to rights doing things that are just completely unacceptable, including right. industrial espionage.
Right.
So it's they haven't got a clean record,
yeah.
and therefore that's always going to count against them.
And the lack of transparency, the sort of opacity of it all. You know, if you don't. Again, I'll speak on behalf of journalists. I'm warming to this theme.
Just defer to you from now on.
As we know, as journalists, if you know, we'll fill a vacuum. If people aren't giving us information, then we'll fill it with blind, irresponsible speculation. And I think that's what's happening a little bit there.
Can we stop making that speak?
That's another bit that might have to be redacted.
Yeah, giving away all the trade secrets. So what else should we make up?
I hope you don't see any vacuums later on this evening.
Yeah, right.
Okay, perhaps we'll move on from that.
You think?
What else?
You have to do a little summing up.
Summing up of what?
The
of
Huawei
that thing.
Issue. Are you just kind
of the Huawei issue? Well, I think that was a summing up. No one's given us much hard evidence of what's going on.
No.
I think there is an increasing sense of they're a little bit dodgy and the Americans don't like them, so let's just err on the side of caution and just give them a wide berth. So now you've got this thing happening with BT, and that might happen with other operators in the UK, and it might happen in other bits of Europe. I don't know if it's in your piece or the FT piece or whatever they're going. So what's Deutsche Telekom got to say about it now?
Jamie at telecoms.com put some good context around it, actually,
right.
when he said that the other UK operators don't have they don't have Huawei in the core.
Okay.
If you look at all the other mobile operators, so Three, for example,
yeah.
has a radio access network deal with Huawei, but they use Nokia in the core.
Right.
They're all in that sort of situation,
okay.
I think. But it'd be interesting looking at other operators that do have other European operators that do have Huawei.
DT is one.
I think DT in Germany is one that is using. And there's obviously concerns in Germany. That's been reported on in the last few weeks that the German government might be thinking of going down this route that the Australians and the New Zealanders have taken.
And then it just snowballs, and then you can see basically all like Western Europe, North America, Australasia. Yeah, that's some serious stuff for Huawei. So
but the rulings in Australia and New Zealand are a lot more stringent, aren't they? I mean, that's
Australia,
sort of blanket 5G, as far as I understand it, exclusion. So that means you wouldn't even be able to have Huawei base stations and anything.
Well, the US is even more so, isn't it? They're not even keen on phones there.
Yeah, I don't think the carriers won't sell their phones. You can buy them,
yeah.
I think, but you can't actually get them bought through an authorized carrier and put on their network.
And that was a bit of news that happened at the start of the year around about CES, yeah. when AT&T and Verizon, I think, were going to make some big announcements about the latest WIZI Huawei phone.
Right.
And then suddenly they went, oh, actually, no.
Yeah,
and clearly someone had lent on them.
Right, they were gonna announce it on their network, and that was gonna sort of legitimize not only the new phone, which has an incredible camera, from what I understand,
the top notch specs and all.
Yeah, but then at the last hour, I don't remember how long it was before the trade show announcement actually happened, but that suddenly I don't remember how the news got out. If you could speak on behalf of journalists and let me know,
it was that source that we all have.
But suddenly it got put it on their network, and it just sort of instantly took them out of the handset market. And I mean, it was quite a powerful thing. This is more evidence of that, but I guess in much more concentrated steps, country by country. So this is not good for Huawei, but it's really hard to see where this goes next.
I think ultimately, we looked at what happened with ZTE at the start of the year, where they were all almost dead and buried, and then diplomatically, politically, it got resolved.
Yeah.
It feels like Huawei is just another sort of bargaining chip in this great big game. Just like, we wrote a piece on telecoms.com earlier on this week, I think, about how the Qualcomm NXP thing might be back on the table.
Right.
I mean, that can only have happened because the Chinese and the Americans have had a chat, and it's back on as a negotiating chip.
Yeah.
So it just feels like everyone's a bit of a pawn in this great big geopolitical game. It's all good fun. It's just something to bang on about, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. Talking about new phones.
Something to bang on about.
That's what we do.
That's what all journalists do, isn't it, Phil?
Sure. I'm on this side now.
There's been some on both sites. We've been writing about Verizon first, and then shortly after AT&T announcing they were going to launch a Samsung 5G phone. Yep. They're only getting as far as first half of next year,
yeah,
aren't they?
That's so specific.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? So don't make too many plans. Yeah. But yes, I mean, one thing that's interesting about it, I was chatting to a big kit vendor the other day. I'm not going to mention it because it wasn't an on-the-record chat. But they were saying now, you know, things like that point to the timeline being about 6 months to a year earlier than we thought a few years ago. We didn't think that we were going to be seeing actual device in the wild till 2020, did we? As recently as a few mobile congresses ago. So that'll be interesting. And they're going to be Samsung phones. There was just an announcement, I was just catching up on the news. I could have been, instead of in Lisbon, I could have been in Hawaii this week because I was invited to a Qualcomm, yet another Qualcomm 5G fest that they're doing in Hawaii, where they've announced a Snapdragon chip called the 855, which is their first full 5G system on chip, okay, i.e. the modem and the application processor and all the other bits of silicon. Look at Ray. Ray's doing that. I don't give a toss about phones.
Like no, I wasn't. Not at all.
What are you smirking at the camera for then?
I wasn't. I was smirking at the camera.
Would you care to share the joke with the rest of the class?
Pierre was making an irritating clicking noise.
Oh, I see. Oh. God, you tell Jamie off when he does that. You're such a hypocrite.
Oh, but it just sounded like you were there. You know.
Yes.
The full name.
They
don't have super tan than usual.
They don't have super bock in Hawaii, so consider that. Yeah.
Well, quite. No,
or the undercover.
Obviously, I'd far rather be here with you crazy kids than over in Hawaii, doing whatever you do in Hawaii, drinking coconut-based drinks.
Yeah.
Perhaps I'll have a coconut-based drink tonight, just to sort of have the best of both worlds. How about that?
Good luck.
So yeah, so that's what's going on there. I'm not sure what there is to discuss other than, I don't know, would you want a 5G phone? Are you excited about the prospect of having a 5G phone in your pocket?
Not yet. It's only going to be in a few blocks in Dallas. There's not enough coverage where I live that it would matter.
You live in Dallas?
I live in Fort Worth, so I'm near enough to it, but I'm or nearer than most people to the first 5G sort of implementation, or one of the first, but it's only going to be block by block, you know, at first. So
and you're an Apple customer.
And I'm an Apple customer, yeah. Right. So I'm going to wait until Apple tells me to buy a 5G
phone. Which will be about 2021, I think.
That's okay. Whatever they say, I like.
Whenever Intel get their act together on the modem.
That'll be $1,400.
I can wait. It's probably not that good anyway.
No, but I mean, that is a really good point about the network. I don't know if it was always this way with early adopters of new Gs, but you can get the very first 5G handset, but if there's no network, it's kind of cosmetic, isn't it?
Yeah, you can use it in one coffee shop in central London or something.
Oh,
that's it. Yeah.
And even then, it'll probably be not much faster.
I'm in.
Yeah. We'll just get one for Ray. That'll be our test case.
So, okay, that's that. I think we've exhausted that one. Oh, yeah, there was one more thing.
I didn't like that joke.
Sorry, I didn't hear you. I was marshalling my thoughts.
We were just, never mind. Go ahead. Keep marshalling.
Ian, well, I'm going to delegate now. In last week, Ray and I were having lunch with Ericsson last week, I've got to say. They gave us a little Christmas present.
That's very nice. Yeah.
Do you know what I really like about this? So, not only has it got a little three prong, so we've got micro USB, Lightning, and USB C.
Nice.
But if you want to know how much charge is there, if you just press this button and look, 100%.
Wow.
So well done, Ericsson.
Did you get one of those?
So does that Cisco one.
It doesn't have numbers on it.
It hasn't got numbers on it, has it? No, it's just got little LEDs. It's rubbish. Get this out of my sight.
I was also given one, but I didn't even get it out of the box before it disappeared from my ownership.
Okay, well, I got nicked at
home. You got it home and then it disappeared out of your
ownership. It's gone to Brighton.
Right.
So while we were hanging out with Ericsson, you were hanging out with Orange. You and Jamie were hanging out with Orange. Mm.
Who's Jamie?
Jamie Davis on telecoms.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Scott's colleague. Yeah. Regular podcast.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Jamie, he's going to make you pay for that. he's going to make you drink your own body weight in tequila.
Oh, he's already done that.
it's an Orange event.
Yeah, and what were they banging on about?
They were on about their banking plans.
Okay. They like a
good
bank.
Which I think is a topic here today, yeah? But I don't know what you guys talked about because I wasn't in it. But they're really aggressive on the move into banking.
Yeah, like, and they're maybe one of the few operators that's really gone on.
Yeah, so they bought a bank in 2016, I think, called Groupama. They bought a majority stake in that as a sort of launch into banking, and they've subsequently launched a banking service in France. And they've now announced they're going to be taking it into Spain and Romania next year, and then another few countries in Europe by 2023.
And expect to actually make a profit.
Yeah, that is pretty costly, so because of all the investments in systems and customer acquisition, basically, in the early years, they're not expecting to break even from it until 2023.
Enough.
So, but it's obviously a long-term
just that kind of long-termism so, that we often lament. It doesn't happen enough. And why would I bank with Orange? What's in it for me?
So they're not trying to introduce new services, the kinds of things that you it's the same services you would get with a traditional bank. They're just trying to improve on the offer. So they think that they're basically seeing an opportunity to massively improve customer service.
Okay. And if you're an Orange mobile customer, you get a better interest rate.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a bit of synergy there.
There's synergy, there's an opportunity for them to, you know, pitch themselves as a kind of, you know, provider of more household services, I guess, which is a convenience thing. There's various things they're doing on the app side that they claim are a lot better than you would get from traditional banks. So little things like details of transactions showing up very quickly, or if you lose a credit card, it's very easy to lock it down, whereas it isn't with other French banks. They have this AI system they developed with IBM that is now dealing with about 50% of customer queries.
Okay.
My concern with it would be whether this sort of move into the digital world is a bit too much for some customers. And, you know, when they start to go towards services like mortgages, whether that will... Mm. And I asked them about this at the event, and they said, so their strategy is basically to use existing Orange stores to get customers in and sign them up.
Yeah.
But then all the customer support after that is pretty much done through these digital channels,
right,
and the AI assistant.
But the young people are really into
young
the digital
into
alternative
it.
Banks, aren't
but,
they?
But so. I spoke during one of my video interviews I did earlier, which I think I can talk about because it was an editorial one on the Record. I spoke with Vodafone.
Oh no, not that.
And she was saying that's one of the. So she's a lady involved on the AI side, and she was saying that's one of the issues with AI is that taking it into some services is maybe a step too far for a lot of customers. So banking, older people, you know, would not want to necessarily
use
that
system.
You
know, it's
and
your
people
cash.
Want to be able to go into a bank and speak to somebody and deal with certain things in the bank branch and.
I don't know, that's kind of dying anyway, isn't it?
It's not. Well, from my own perspective, I bank with a bank that has hardly any branches. And
I was just going to say he does that.
I find that really annoying because little things like people still sending you checks, you then find it very difficult to pay them in unless you're prepared to stick it in the post and risk losing it. Then you.
If they've managed to develop a really, really well-trained bot that can actually answer a lot of the basic questions and actually involve in an interaction.
And it's getting better,
apparently. Yeah. So. Then you can see that would, you know, that would be of great use. But it's just getting there because, I mean, a lot of bots these days are just irritating.
Yeah.
It's like you go to a website, you're just thinking, and what was it I came to this website for? And it's like, can I help you? It's like, no, fuck her off.
Get out of my
face.
Yeah.
The other doubt, I guess, is how quickly the competition responds, because I think there's another French bank called Credit Mutuel that's already working with IBM on an AI assistant as well.
I'm sure they all
and,
are.
And as soon as Orange has gone in and shaken things up a bit, people are, they don't have a monopoly on AI, and they don't have a monopoly on building mobile apps. So, and it's fiercely competitive. It's like certain telecom markets are, margins are pretty tight, you know, and it's difficult to sort of succeed.
So we've got two things. We've got the technology play, and then we've got the brand sort of transferability or whatever.
But can you imagine, like, a couple of years down the line, that Orange says to people, if you have a loan or savings of more than 1,000 euros with us, you'll get an extra gig of data a week.
Yeah,
I think that's the exciting side of it, I guess, is that
it's an interest.
Innovation and tying different services together and doing something interesting around them.
Yeah.
So, oh, and we've got to prove, because we're always criticising operators for not being innovative enough and all that. So.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's always on about where are the new revenue streams. You know, this is...
That's probably the standout example, I think, at the moment in Europe, definitely, of an operator doing something really radically different. And they do tell a nice story. They're pretty good at putting senior executives
what was
in front
the lunch
of you
like?
And explaining it to you. The lunch was really good, actually.
Yeah, they normally give good lunch.
Yeah, they do. Orange, yeah.
And excellent one was bad, wasn't it? Decent bit of cod.
Very much so.
Nice bit of sancerre.
It was a fancy damn place, though.
It was.
I got the look up and down when I got to the door.
You got what?
I got looked up and down.
Right. Bet you did. Yeah.
Did you have a t-shirt on at the time?
No, I was wearing a shirt and a jacket, and they still looked at me as if I think you need the tradesman's entrance if you're doing something.
I was wearing a t-shirt. They didn't look me up and down.
Fancy.
They just wrote me off. Cool. Well, Pierre's done a runner, but we're sort of coming close to wrapping up. Were there any other last thoughts from the day that you guys want to share before we, or is it all too confidential? Would you have to kill our entire audience?
I think
if you told them.
I have no thoughts now.
No. Given all my thoughts out already.
Yeah. One super bulk and like more than an hour since we last had a session. I have nothing.
Yeah. You're just winding down. Okay, well, that's absolutely fine. Well, thanks a lot for joining us. I hope you're over in the UK sometime.
Yeah, I hope so.
Join us for another one.
It'll be fun.
You're quite good at this podcasting. You should start one of your own.
I might. We'll see how it goes.
All right, well, cheers, guys.
Cheers.
And thank you for watching. Make sure you join us for the next one.